What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter. Maybe you're listening later at Spotify.
Stitcher, yeah. Let's go.
Hold on, Pete. It's dangerous to go alone. Take this with you. And by this, of course, I mean a thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. Specifically, though, this is what Pete's telling me to hurry up about here, is once a month we say a thank you to people who are at the $5 and up level. We read their names as a thank you. We, of course, thank everybody for the support at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Yes. But here we go. Otherwise, Pete's going to blow a gasket. Oidis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Oh, my God. Adam DeRose.
Adam Harwitz.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew.
Hot on the mic, Pete, and also Andrew Primo.
Beer Cat PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Carly W.
Carly Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luaire.
Curtis LaRock.
D-Man Ryan.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabrera.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sutaway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Aaron Dorian. What? We just went wild. Okay, Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard Delvilla.
Great. Pete's always working on his French. Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Cottley.
James Kurtz.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
John Henderson.
Jonathan John.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Bronson.
Julian Lobato.
Casey Newhaven.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Liwana Thomas.
Luke Asink.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Similarly, Nick Grayson.
Wonder if they're the same person. Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies. Omnia Soul Art.
Orn Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Perry Telefero.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Tamela Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
Terrible Jason.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Banch.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
W.M. Leisch.
Zachary Backman.
And Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you, everybody, for your support of our show. For real, we could not do it without you. If you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub, and you get some amazing bonuses. At least I think they're amazing. You get our entire catalog of every podcast we do, stretching back to 2011, which is thousands of podcasts.
It's too far to go.
Okay, you're right.
That's just the right amount of information.
I'll delete it from pre-2020. So as of right now, per Pete's request, you only get 2020 and beyond.
No, we need the archives.
Smart. We got to condense it.
They don't need to hear that.
They don't need all that.
We should go back and re-listen to those from the beginning. Just to learn about it.
I'll tell you what's really good about them, the audio quality. Anyway, we did a bunch of them live in a theater, and there was variable audio quality, but I think some of them are very good. We had some great chats.
We were in the early days of podcasting. You don't blame the first cave people for not having
a
charcoal grill.
We had that guy with the crank who was putting them down on records the entire time.
That guy, Thomas Alva Edison.
The first phone call, one of our podcasts.
Yep. Wax cylinder.
Hey, don't we have a show to do?
No, we just have to plug. This is the show. We have two guests waiting. And before we got on, when I teched them, they were like, could you guys talk about the podcast instead for like an hour and specifically the Patreon part of it? Like, just plug that and don't ever bring us on to talk about our stuff.
Come on, man. Let's do this.
Granted.
Anyway, it's good. Thank you all for your support at whatever level. We really appreciate it. Why don't we bring in our first guest here? He is the creator. Well, where do you have to go, Pete? Where do you have to go?
I just don't like to keep amazing guests waiting. That's all.
You're just like, come on, I got to get through this. Is this because of trivia? Is trivia like laying on you at the top of the show and it's just this bearing down to you?
No, man.
He's doing a little bit of a pee-pee dance.
I try not to be mean to our guests.
Do you need to go pee-pee? I told you to pee-pee before we left.
Don't talk to me like I'm one of your kids, you asshole. Let's go. Let's fucking do this.
I don't say that to my children. That's gross. All right,
it's interesting, Pete, because ironically, you were trying to rush us to the guests, and it actually delayed them. Isn't that a lesson? Maybe there's a lesson there.
Yeah, it feels like every time you try to rush us, we take longer, Pete. Have you ever noticed that? Like, traditionally, for 15 years at this point.
It is a tradition, like the favorite tradition.
Right. It's like Passover for my people, the Jews. Yeah. Why don't we bring in our first guest? He is the creator of Zoop's Full Tilt, which is up on Zoop appropriately right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Copeland, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for your patience with our intro. We appreciate it.
I actually really enjoyed that whole thing. That was quite something. You guys all have a good chemistry.
Thank you. Should we do it again? Should we run it from the top?
Now, Alex, you're being weird. It's from years of being, I don't know, codependent. What is the word the psychologist told us?
Yeah, I was actually pretty good just staying in the back room there and just watching you guys talk.
Some people book guests for their show. We book future audience members.
There you go. Yeah. I'll pay just to sit in there.
So I do want to get into your book, which is great. But before we do this, not to keep focusing on things that are weighing on Pete, but I know this is going to come up, so I want to get the segment out of the way so it doesn't bother him too much. Pete, do you want to do your background interview before we
get into it looks like you
background.
Have some amazing stuff back there. I love the art that you have behind you. Plus, you got your cool art board and studio set up there. Any gems you want to kind of show off or point out to us?
As in books, you mean?
Yeah, or anything hanging on the wall back there. It all looks amazing.
I think he wants to talk about the Sin City poster, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I got that. That was a freebie from a local comic store. They were just, I got it mounted.
Nice.
I was lucky enough to grab one. I think they only got like two or three, and I just happened to be there when they were unloading the box. That was years ago. That's when that book was coming out. So.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't really have anything to show. Okay. No, not really. Sorry.
You got a clock. We know what time it is. That's the important
exactly.
thing.
Like
think it's interesting that you have a Sin City poster there, because I was going to ask you about this, and I'm sure you get this a lot, but Full Tilt, looking through the art, it has its own unique style, but it does seem very influenced by Frank Miller in particular. Is that one of your inferences? Is that what you pulled on for this book?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a huge influence for me. I was actually when Pete there was asking what was around in my office.
Look at that.
It lives like by my drawing table. I was going to show it and I thought, no, I won't show it, but now I'll show it. So Miller's huge for me. I wear my influences pretty much on my sleeve, I think. So it's hard to hide that one.
Awesome.
Well, but it does have its own unique style for anybody who's listening to the podcast. And it definitely has a different bent than a Sin City or anything like that, though it is still, there's crime, there's some near future stuff going on. Do you want to give the pitch for the book, if you don't mind?
Oh, man, I'm horrible at this, but I will certainly.
Sorry.
I'm an artist turned artist writer. So this idea of pitching and like presenting things is like totally foreign to me. It's not my forte. So please forgive me.
No worries, man.
All right. Okay. Full Tilt is an action-filled future noir epic that touches on many eternal themes such as love and hate, family, power, and control. The story takes place in New Manhattan, the once gleaming state-of-the-art city of the 23rd century. Now in the throes of social and moral decay, the city houses despondent citizens who lose themselves in narcotics and high-tech toys. Corrupt law enforcement agencies terrorize the population. Bloodthirsty fans cheer as an indentured gladiators fight death matches to gain their freedom. It's the end of civilization, and the five crime families control it all.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's awesome. Tense. And let me just throw your tagline at you that's on your Zoop page. Sin City meets the Godfather in the setting of Blade Runner. Which is, that's a fun mashup of things there.
Yeah. It's kind of where I live. Those are my wheelhouses right there.
Well, I was going to ask about that. I mean, why, if you are, it sounds like you're almost a little uncomfortable about the fact that you are a writer now at the same time. So why was it important to do this genre in your first or one of your first forays?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the natural, just sort of where my sensibilities lie. I don't know if I consciously chose a particular genre. It's just sort of where I feel comfortable, kind of creating. I keep saying near future. It's not near future. It's set, 200 years in the future. But I like that setting because then I can get away with all sorts of things where I can make stuff up and I don't really have to worry about some things. Crime, the future, dystopian futures, that's sort of my deal.
And when you say that's your wheelhouse, is that led by what you like to draw and create on the artist side? Or is that more from your, the stories you like to consume or something like that?
I'm pretty close to both, I'd say. I think that I've been asked to draw lots of different things through my career. So I tend to get more excited about the things that are futuristic. I have a pretty gritty style, it's not what I would call super clean. So the kind of this dystopian future seems to fit my style pretty well. So it feels like that's sort of kind of where I would go. If I had to draw something that was like a romance, something, I would have a problem because I think my style wouldn't exactly lend itself to that genre.
Now, this is just a logistical question. I'm curious, all the art that you're showing off, I'm looking at your Zoop page right now, and there's some gorgeous stuff on there. It's all black and white. Is this a black and white book?
It certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, I know Pete loves the black and white. He's a big fan of it. But why do you like it? Why do you lean into it? Is it just ease of, all right, I don't need to bring a colorist into this? Or is that your preference in terms of how you execute on your art?
I tend to like high contrast art as a viewer. And as a drawing experience, it's sort of what it's all about, just laying lines on paper. So black ink on white, it's an immediate sort of thing with that. I get a kick out of. I like colored comics, but I seem to gravitate towards styles and art that are black and white and high contrasty, that sort of thing. So it's not that I have an adverse, it's not like I don't like colors, but I do tend to find myself attracted to the art styles that are more in a black and white sort of setup.
And why do you think that is? Because that's something I feel like a lot of comic, I feel like there's a little bit of a divide there amongst comic readers. Is it because the emphasis on different textures and shading and things like that?
Yeah, I don't know. For me personally, I always just feel like color gets in the way of getting right down to the essence of the drawing. The color tends to hide some of the lines, some of the texture, some of the nuances that would happen with the drawing with just ink on paper, the marks that are being made. With the color holds, lots of colors use color holds. It takes it out of that realm. It becomes more of a collaboration. I guess what I tend to focus most on is sort of like a singular sort of vision, the something that I can get closer to the act of creation in the drawing as opposed to it as a total package sort of thing. So it allows me to see, at least if I feel like it allows me to see how the artist put it down on paper, what their process was. Because I'm kind of a process junkie, so.
Oh, that's cool. So you think it feels closer to the artist's original vision or like closer to a direct line almost?
Yeah, that's what I feel, yeah.
Well, talking about the process a little bit more, if you are a process junkie, I'm curious about specifically how you put together these pages. Looking at them a little bit more, I know we called out Frank Miller, and there's definitely like the stark blacks going against white of a classic Frank Miller, like the Sin City thing behind you. But it also seems like you have a little bit of the delicate sort of scratchy pencil work of Howard Chaykin a little bit in there as well. I don't know if that's also an influence. So how'd you tackle the art specifically for this book?
The actual process is I do the roughs digitally in my Cintiq, and they're very rough. Sometimes you might be hard pressed to find out what it is I'm actually drawing. and then I print those
just
out.
A big square that says city.
I won't even go that far. I just would put a square. I would just know it was a city. That's actually the
beauty. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
the
beauty of writing for myself too was that the script, I didn't have to write a whole lot of descriptions and stuff because it was all, you know, it's in my head. So, so the roughs I would print out on my printer onto actual boards, and then I would ink that traditionally, and I'm a messy inker. I'll pencil hands and faces if I really need to feel like I really need to hit a certain look or a certain emotion or whatever. But a lot of the times I'm just sort of flying by the seat of my pants, and so I go through a lot of whiteout, like tons of whiteout. and it's really about the process, trying to just live in the process of drawing and putting a mark down and reacting to that mark and making another mark or getting out the whiteout and destroying a mark. So for me, a lot of it is the process. I mean, I'd be lying if it wasn't also about the final result, but the act of drawing for me is a lot of fun. So I really kind of mess around and my pages, some of my pages have just like so much whiteout. It's unbelievable.
I was going to say they got layers and layers of whiteout. Pen, whiteout.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. If like some sort of archaeologist could like dig through the levels, there's some pages that probably have like 30 drawings, and I would draw it, wouldn't like it. I white it out. I draw it again. I would white it out. I draw it again. You could probably find.
That's kind of cool on its own. Like that's the sort of thing that would be very interesting in terms of a gallery showing, putting up your art and being able to physically see the way that looks.
Yeah, they're like topographical maps. You can kind of just rub them and you can feel how it all goes.
We've had a bunch of guests from Zoop on the show. So most of our listeners, I think, are mostly pretty familiar with Zoop, but I am always curious about your experience here. I mean, just to set it up for folks, again, I'm looking at the Zoop page now, and you have 23 days left. You were looking for $10,000, and you're up to over $37,000 right now.
Yeah. 461 supporters, which is a lot of humans.
That's awesome. So what has this experience been like for you?
Oh, it's been fantastic. I honestly thought that I'd be beating the drum with like 5 hours left to try to get it over the $10,000 mark. I honestly thought that. Apparently it funded in about an hour and 10 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm so grateful for the support that people have been putting behind this. It's fantastic. And it made me livable for my wife was very concerned what kind of person I'd be for this month waiting for it to fund. So because it funding so quickly, I'm nice. I'm not wallowing around and constantly refreshing the page and that sort of thing. So
have you gone too far the other way? Just walking around in a bathrobe, drinking martinis, smoking cigars, top of the world.
That's no different than the way I normally roll.
I knew it.
Good for you. Good for you.
You're just lucky I'm wearing a shirt because I'm not wearing any pants right now.
Same here. I'm dollar ducking it too. That's what we're talking about, right? No, too much? Took it too far?
Yeah,
no, that's sure did. Just what we wanted.
Sure
hear.
Did.
Now, Jason, I have a slightly off-topic question, but I wanted to ask you just specifically because you're a Frank Miller fan and an artist. I'm curious to get your take on this, not to put you on the spot, but the internet has been fighting for the past couple of days. Sorry about this Frank Miller Wolverine cover. Just to set it up, Pete, I haven't heard your take on it. Justin, I know you're more negative about it. I think I was more positive about it. Have you seen the cover? And I'm curious what you think about it, because there's been a lot of discussion, to set it up for our listeners, about evolving style and changing style and whether it's, you know, getting into the minutiae of like, is it a good cover or a bad cover? But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this new take from Frank Miller.
There was four of them, right? I know that the Wolverine's the one that seems to have really got people going. There was four. There was the Moon Knight, the Wolverine, the Thing, and then there was one other. one. And I'm blanking what the other one was.
I've only seen the Thing in the Wolverine.
Oh. Yeah.
But there's Wolverine.
So the Moon Knight one is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's straight up Miller. Like, it's fantastic. The other three I have mixed reactions to. I think a little bit. Somebody actually took that the Wolverine one and just showed the black and white. Mm. And they made a little bit of an argument that colors don't really know what to do with Frank Miller.
Interesting.
And it is stronger without the color. Not no again. No knock on whoever colored.
Man, you hate colors.
My color sense isn't very good, so I tend to not think in color. But I think props to him for still drawing. I honestly don't know what his health state is. So it's easy to throw stones. It is so easy to throw stones. Yeah. My personal stance is that if he is continuing to draw and he enjoys the act of drawing, fuck, let him draw whatever he wants.
That's great.
And if Marvel wants to give him money, Marvel gives him money, whatever.
It's interesting that you say about the colors, because I could really see that making it a different thing, whole different experience, where it's a little bit evened out, and it's because I feel like you, the fact that you see his torso and up and his sort of blue looking fur, I think hair/fur, I think it does look, it changes the look of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe when it's a black and white image, it does it's more reminiscent of Miller's early work.
Well, plus you probably also don't have that sort of lens flare thing happening off the claws or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think I will say the reason I was more positive is I had initially seen this just cropped to Wolverine on the internet. I was like, woof, that doesn't look great. And then I saw the full cover and I saw it was part of a series. And to me, it actually feels a lot more stark. It feels like the figures, it's almost like those old 3D lenticular covers that you get in like the 90s and stuff, where the character is just popping out at you. And right. It really, I don't know, it really stands out. Like, the purpose of a cover is to grab you in the comic book store.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And this is the sort of thing that if I was walking along, I'd be like, what's that? That would jump out at me. The title treatment jumps out at me. I don't know. Again, I'm a little more positive, I think, than some other people, but I appreciate your thoughts regardless, Jason.
Yeah. Well, and for me, oh, go ahead.
I get really upset when people get on the internet and complain about stuff. Like, it's one of those things where, and I know that's what the internet is for, apparently. but you know, why focus on the things that you hate? The amount of negativity that came out of this was just, like, it numbs me. It makes me pretty sad. There's no need to throw hate at it. Just let it go by. If you don't like it, just leave it. Yeah. And for all these people to come out and say whatever they say, like, it just makes me shake my head.
Yeah. Just so you know, someone had made a comment. Blade was the other one you were trying to think of.
Yeah.
But to kind of switch gears a little bit, I just wanted to say thank you, man. Kill All Monsters was just so badass. Phil Tilt looks just as badass. Phil, I just wanted to thank you for these, like, unbelievable worlds that you create. And I love living of them. I love all the action. I love how intense it is. So I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you for your work, man. And hearing that it takes you a lot of time, yet you still have fun, is very inspirational. Thank you for sharing that.
And he's not wearing pants, so
yeah.
You might be excited to know that Michael and I will be doing more Kill 'Em Monsters. So
Ooh, nice,
great.
I'm excited for that. Yeah. That's awesome, Jason. Thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the project. Congratulations on all the success. It is awesome, and I'm looking forward to it coming to a close and more of everything from you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night. Have a good one.
Oop, I cut him off. Sorry about that, Jason.
Way to be,
regardless,
dude.
Yeah, I'm a bad guy. But check out, it's on Zoop for the next 20-ish days or so, depending on when you're listening to this. It's called Full Tilt, and it is so cool, and it looks so cool, and you're definitely not going to be sorry supporting this project. It is awesome.
Yeah, why it looks sick.
We move on with our next guest. He is the creator of Saga of the Shield Maiden, excuse me, Asa Wheatley. Asa, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Once again, I'm going to turn it over to Pete for the background.
Yeah, thank you. You look like you have some amazing stuff behind you. Anything you want to point out to us? Because that wall looks amazing.
Well, this wall is actually my partner's desk. So she's an illustrator and comic creator as well. And she's in the first Shield Maiden book. Sammy Ward. So my stuff is all on my ward.
We're looking at the wrong wall right now.
We're looking at the wrong wall. Yeah, but you might appreciate that.
She's killing the game. That's unbelievable what she's got going on. Maybe we can get her for another show because it seems like she would be amazing.
So we could finally see your wall.
That's a great call, Alex.
That's a good way. But I've got a couple of Hackslash pages on the wall.
Yeah, Hackslash.
Hackslash that I read because of you guys.
We'll take that. Shouts to Pete.
When you used to all sit on a single sofa and talk about the stuff.
We're still sitting on a single sofa. We just set up three different green screens behind us and have different angles.
Yeah.
It's too complicated. It's very complicated.
It's all a weird lie. I don't know why we're telling it. We all live in the same house, Huey, Dewey, and Louie style.
Yeah. So, Issa, you have Saga of the Shield Maiden actually has been coming out for a little while now. You have the third volume is on Kickstarter now. Just to set it up, this is another super successful Kickstarter. You were looking for $3,131, and with 18 days to go, you are currently at $11,583.
Hey, killing it.
388 backers. And this is for book three of Sagas of the Shield Maiden, as well as books one and two. So talk us through this. Do not get too reductive about it. Like it feels a little bit Red Sonja related and sort of using that sort of type of thing as a jump off. I think if you're a fan of that, you might be a fan of this, though it definitely goes in different directions and it definitely tells stories in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's fairly accurate. Can I also just say that in dollars, my goal sounds way better because currently looking at it in pounds, it's just over 9,000 rather than just over 11. So
there it is.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it sounds even better to me today. It is kind of influenced by that kind of fantasy stuff, but then also taken a lot of influence from things like Hellboy, and having that kind of singular like main character and their adventures, and then kind of adding a couple of returning characters as they go along as well. And it's instead of like something like Hellboy, where it'd be kind of like maybe a 5-issue story or like kind of full issue stories, it's a bit more all the books are anthologies, so they all have multiple stories about the same main character in each of them.
Well, where did that start with? I mean, was that not to get too reductive about it, but was like that a utility thing in terms of saying, okay, I can write these stories and then get them out to a couple of different artists to put together as an anthology? Was the original idea just, hey, I want an anthology, and then you went out to the artists? What was the order of the process there?
So kind of a bit of both, I guess, is the cop-out answer. But it started as one of the stories. So one of the stories in book one was the first thing that I kind of thought of. And then in writing other comics, I did a couple of anthologies and really enjoyed just the ability to work on one book, but work with multiple different artists all at once. And also the kind of in terms of actually producing comics, because it's all self-published stuff, the ability to send 5 shorter scripts to 5 different artists and get 20 pages back within like a month, rather than sending a 20-page script to one artist and having to wait a much longer time.
Yeah, there we go.
I got you. You're more of a buffet guy. You like the buffets.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Just dipping in, but to artists instead of food. Yeah.
Nice. Grazer.
Now, given that you're setting this in a specific time period, granted, it's, you know, it's not like historical fiction necessarily, but you are setting it in this specific time and place. How much research did you do? Did you look into this time and place, or did you just kind of feel like, all right, these are stories about these characters. I'm just going to kind of follow them wherever I think they're going to go.
So this kind of time period is something that I'm interested in anyway. So before I even started writing the book, I have a fascination of like the kind of Viking time period and Norse mythology and stuff like that anyway. So some of it was already just built into knowledge that I had. But then in writing it, I kind of did more research. But I'm also not massively worried about being super duper historically accurate. There are some elements of it that are accurate. And so the character that's on the screen at the moment that is with the Shield Maiden in this story is supposedly a real life historical character. She is thought to be the bones of one of the kind of most famous and biggest ship burials that they've like discovered in the last 100 years. So if that is supposedly her, then she was a real life person who is the kind of lineage of the first king of Norway. And so there is elements of historical stuff, but I've changed it where I've needed to fit into the stories that I want to tell.
Now, let me ask you, in your a lot of your information here, you call it a Viking Western. So are Vikings the cowboys and cowgirls of the frozen sea? Are they very cold cowboys?
Yeah. They ride horses.
Can't believe you cut me off for that question.
This is a very important historical question.
Yeah, I was wondering that the entire time. Even when we were talking to Jason earlier, I was like, are Vikings the cold cowboys?
Yeah.
Of the sea.
Of the sea.
I would want to know, on a project like this, what's your favorite part? Is it doing the research? Is it getting back all the different arts, kind of different art takes on a similar character? Is it, you know, kind of creating the writing for this story? What's your favorite part about a project like this?
Is two things. The first is getting emails back from artists with pages. Mm. Whether they're pinups, whether they're interior pages, whether they're one of the three amazing covers that I've had for each of the books. And then the second thing is then when, after I do all the posting, which is not my favorite thing, when people start getting it and reading it and enjoying it, that and people coming up to me at like conventions and say that they picked it up on the Kickstarter, things like that. That's the second, next to getting pages in my inbox.
Cool. This is a little bit of follow-up, but if Vikings are cold cowboys, are regular cowboys hot cowboys, or are there separate?
No, they're hot Vikings.
Oh, yeah, cowboys are hot Vikings.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is hot temperature wise. Yeah. They're dusty Vikings. Great point.
In actual answers to a silly question, the kind of idea that I had with comparing it to like Westerns is in like kind of the idea of like the Wild West became kind of like civilized and the kind of like taming of the Wild West in the Viking Age. A very similar thing was done, but with Christianity being introduced. So kind of Christianity was introduced and like a lot of the kind of like pagan religion began to like disappear. And so the idea was, as well as just making cold cowboys, was to kind of mirror that with the two very different time periods, but making them almost about similar things.
Now, this is the third volume you've done of this, and as we've already established, it's not just the third story. This is a lot of stories at this point. How has your process developed? What have you found and tackled differently in the third volume, the way that you're writing these stories versus the first volume?
So the first volume, I didn't know if I would have the opportunity to do any more. So I kind of wrote a list of stories that I wanted to do, but I still have that list that has just been added to as I've gone along. But I wanted to get five stories that could all be told on their own in the first book. And if that was all I could do, then I wanted to just make sure that I was happy with it. The difference now in the third book is because of the way that I've set up some of those stories, and because of it's much more anthology based and the stories are all shorter in the earlier books, what I want to do now is make almost like a longer running series, but still with that kind of anthology format. So I've kind of gone for there's still three stories, still by three different artists, but two of the stories are basically the beginning of two different timelines of the main character's life. So following a younger version and one following an older version, in the hopes that eventually the younger version will catch up with the older and kind of bridge that and complete that timeline.
Awesome. Cool. So it's like a whole young Indiana Jones Chronicles, regular Indiana Jones type thing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah,
top of mind. They announced today they're all going to be on Disney Plus. I'm very excited.
Oh man, what a show that everyone's going to be disappointed in again. Do you remember when that came out? Everyone was like, "Oh,
about it was a saxophone. My favorite show. It was my favorite show. Every episode." Indiana Jones hung out with a historical figure and they went on an adventure. It was perfect.
Yeah.
When
Harrison Ford plays the tiny saxophone.
As young
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, he's doing that in the new movie, too. They digitally de-aged him to like the age of Raiders, and then they also digitally de-aged him to be a baby. It's going to be baby Harrison Ford.
Oh, that's adorable.
Baby yeah. Indy.
We named the dog Indiana. He's going to say
great. Oh, I hope the dog's a puppy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, this seems to have addressed everything about your book, I think.
One more question. So, like, a turkey leg is like a can of beans where the cans, the beans are on the outside and the can. Mm-hmm.
A fish is like a cold turkey of the sea.
No, tuna.
Tuna. There you go. Asa, more specifically in terms of your actual book before we let you go. So the Kickstarter, obviously very successful at this point, but other than the book, what potentially can people expect if they pledge? What can they look forward to?
So we have a whole host of pinups. So each book, I get five other artists to all do pinups for basically just whatever they want. I don't really give them a brief. I just let them go wild, and they always deliver. You can see all of those on the Kickstarter. And we are pushing towards a stretch goal to get a vinyl sticker so that every physical backer will get a vinyl sticker. I don't know how far away we are from that in dollars. We are about £750 away from it.
Okay. Which is more, as we learned.
Which is more.
The pound is like the dollar for Vikings.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
The pound is like the posh cowboy.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. I got you. Okay. And posh is like fancy for rich Vikings.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, nailed that one. Asa, thank you.
I think we're making a lot of sense. No, honestly, though, the book looks fantastic.
Yes.
I'm going to get back into this and then can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, and having read through the first two, it's great. The stories are really fun and interesting. The art styles are very different. There's awesome artists on it throughout. So very excited to check out Volume 3 as well. Congratulations on the success. It's awesome.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
All right, no problem. We'll have your girlfriend on next time so we can see your wall. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Saga of the Shield Maiden.
Yeah.
It is up on Kickstarter now from Asa Wheatley, so definitely check it out.
Definitely check it out.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And folks, we are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on any of the platforms you're watching, except Twitter. It's not going to work on Twitter, but you can do it anywhere else. In the meantime, though, we should talk about what you're drinking. Specifically, we can kick it off with pretty much every week, Stray Bullet.
Stray Bullies.
Brett Macris, our official CBC chef, a real chef, either curates or designs a drink for us, sometimes comic book based, sometimes not. This week was not, but I'm very excited about it because it is an absolutely delicious drink. He was apparently mowing the lawn, I believe, outside. It was really hot. And he was like, you know what I want is I want a Michelada, but I want to make it with mezcal. So Michelada. He made Michelada. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Like Michelin star.
Michelada.
He made a mezcalada. Is that how you pronounce it? Justin?
It's sort of a mezcala in my hands anyway.
Mezcalada. It is lime and mint and mezcal and lime juice.
It looks refreshing.
And, oh my God. It is so good. A little hot sauce.
Almost looks like Gatorade with tequila in it.
Yeah, that's how it tastes like. Gatorade with tequila. Put a little Brooklyn Brewery Summer Ale, a Sunny Pale Ale in it.
Very good. Cool. Mine looks a little bit different from yours, Alex, and I'll tell you why. When I make a Michelada, I throw a little bit of Worcestershire sauce in it.
Worcestershire.
And so I added that to this mix, and I'll tell you what, it just works really well with the hot sauce. I did a mix of Tabasco and Cholula, but the real classic Michelada hot sauce to use is Valentina sauce, if you can get your hands on that.
Well, great stuff. This one is delicious.
I love it.
Pete, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a beer. I'm drinking something that... it's a little funky. It's called Circle Theory Hazy First State. Whoa, dude.
Ooh.
Yeah, la la. So it's a little intense. And
did you pour any hot sauce or anything in it? Soy sauce? Anything?
No, I don't know. I don't add sauce to my beer, but thank you.
Put a little mayo in there. It'll really...
that's the worst thing you could have said.
A lot of times I'll take an empty mayonnaise jar and fill it with beer.
Guzzle
it on a hot summer day.
I'm trying not to throw
that's
up
called
in my
a mayo shalada.
It is. That is a mayo shalada.
All right, why don't we get some questions here? We got a couple already. This is from Frederica Rosa. What's your guys' opinion on changes on comic books to make them closer to movies or TV shows? Sometimes just the appearance, but Shuri is one I remember being a big change in general. So what do you think about that? Pete, we've lost the bottom of you. This question is so big.
Yeah. I think that it is, you know, I understand the frustration with it because it's like, well, that's not, I read comics for the comic stories, but I think it makes sense to have things line up so that it can all be sort of one thing. And as long as it's done in a way that I think is smart and creative, then I think it's great. Because it gives comic book writers and artists a little bit of an inspiration, like something they have to do and to find the most interesting way to get there.
Pete, yeah, right now, I just want to mention real quick, Pete, visually you look like Wilson from Home Improvement right now.
Okay. Again, your lifelong dream.
Yeah. Great. Topical reference. Anyways, I think it's, you know, because there's an interesting thing about this, right? One, it's like, oh, don't put fucking shackles on someone who is creative. But you hear writers and other creatives talking about sometimes if there is kind of like this thing, either a workaround or what, it can be helpful for them creatively. So I don't know, man. It seems weird to make comics for TV or movie. I don't like the sound of that. I want comics to be the best comics they can be. And then TV and movie, whatever happens afterwards, fine. But I just think that, you know, you want to just try to make the most, the best thing that you can for the medium that you're making it for.
Well, and I like you're referencing last week's episode where we talked to Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming.
Yeah, don't about, do any name dropping or anything. You kind of dropped those. Let me get those for you there.
But I'm saying if you didn't listen, I'm not. You were also part of the not a flex on my part. We were there like 1 week ago. No, you're flexing also. I'm trying to say though, like we had a great conversation about how limitations on a writer and an artist actually sort of give you a freedom, give you a push into something else. And I think that's what this can possibly be.
I'll say I like it. I think anything that can make comics accessible to people and easier for people to jump in is always going to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, there was one point, frankly, that I think I was arguing pretty heavily that they should just wipe out the Marvel Universe and make it the MCU and do everything there. And same thing with the DC Universe, set it in the Arrowverse and just go forward. And I think there is a certain
Set it in the Arrowverse!
For real, get like, at the prime version of that, I think there's something to be said in terms of appealing to the greatest audience possible and making it as easy as possible for somebody to walk into a comic book store and be like, yes, that's the thing I want to read, got it, let's go, rather than being like, hey, I really like the Flash TV show. Can I read the Flash? And be like, yep, but it's three different Flashes who are not on the TV show, and they're back in time, and one of them is in the future, and one is the son and the father of the other, and all of that stuff is too complicated. In terms of lining the things up, which is the other end of the thing that we're mentioning here, I think a lot of that depends on the execution, and frankly, if they're going to do it, I'd rather they just do it and we move forward. Like, the fact that Amanda Waller in both comic books just started looking like Viola Davis, that's cool. I'm fine with that. That's not a problem. Let's just go. That makes it easier for people who see the movies. On the other hand, when Marvel did, I want to say, 5 years of story to explain where Nick Fury had a son named Nick Fury Jr. who then lost the Jr. and then lost one of his eyes and got an eye patch, I was like, can we just do this? Yeah. We all know you're doing Sam Jackson. And then the fact that after that, they had like a year of stories where they'd be like, oh, hello, Nick Fury Jr., who's Nick Fury's son and not actually Nick Fury himself. How are you doing? And he's like, great, can we move on with the rest of the story? I was like,
I don't need this. Just I do understand it. That, but I think we slash or you are in the minority in comic book fandom where, like, think of the letters, the sort of squeaky wheel of people who are like, that my Nick Fury is this.
Also,
and they're trying to just sort of smooth out those edges.
Also, who are you talking about? Who is this person that walks into a comic book shop with blinders on that says, I only want to see the Flash thing that I know and love? And
no, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's somebody who's like, I love the Flash show so much, I'm interested in checking out the comics. And they walk into the store and they're like, hey, I've been watching the Flash show. What can I check out? And they pointed, we talked about this with so many different comics over the years. Like, yeah. I think Wonder Woman is a great example of whenever there would be a Wonder Woman movie coming out, I would love to be like, hey, check this out. This is great for fans of the movie. Instead, it was like, well, Wonder Woman's dead for the fifth time, and now she's a goddess, and she's in the underworld, and everything's different.
Yeah, but some of those comics were great.
I love the comics, Pete. We've been doing a comic book show for 15
years. Oh, have we? I just woke up out of a coma, you asshole.
Let me say,
you are coming in so hot today.
You're damn right.
When I walk into a store,
you're full tilt, buddy. You're full tilt.
Take this down, by the way. This is fucking too much already with this.
Is there a way I can make this bigger so I can cover you up entirely?
When I go into a comic book shop, I'm infuriated every time I see every time I see a book that isn't Frankencastle Punisher.
Ah, boo!
And instead, I get this Punisher.
That's dumb.
Who?
What you're saying is dumb.
No, but I'm saying that because like you can surely identify with the idea of someone wanting their thing to be a particular version of it.
So yeah,
of course.
But it would also be great news to be like, hey, if you love The Flash, look at all these other things that you could read and discover. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Yeah, this is good.
I'm glad you're having fun, Selvin.
I am having a good time.
Look, he is.
All right, why don't we move on to some other questions? This is a specific one from Schreckler. Will Disney Plus include the George Hall old indie segments? So this is a weird thing, just to be very specific about this. I know we were joking a little bit about the news earlier, but Disney Plus did announce that they're going to be putting up all four indie movies, as well as the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. However, They're not putting up the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. They're putting up The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones. And as far as I understand it, there were 6 episodes that were specials of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And then they picked it up as a series, did 22 episodes. And then I believe it got canceled and they didn't broadcast any of them. And then they made a number of movies additionally. Yeah. I think like eight more movies or something like that. When it hit VHS, they took all of that and re-edited the whole thing into 22 movies that had new footage and took out some of the other footage, and that's what's going to be on Disney Plus. So my answer is,
and that's hard to do on VHS. Yeah, you got to record to another tape. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
No, I think whenever you watch press play on one episode of these, someone at Disney has to take a VHS out. Open the thing, look, blow the dust off it, put it in.
Well, I was going to say, this is a little tip. If you're having any problems with Disney Plus, just blow on it like, a little bit, and then put Disney Plus back in. It'll be fine. Boy. So this is a long way of saying I actually don't know, because I don't think I ever saw those versions on VHS. So I have literally no idea what's going to be in it or not. But
I mean, and I'm not saying, I was sort of making fun of it a little bit before, and I'm not saying it's a bad show, but it was just very funny. The promise of it was like, Indiana Jones coming to your TV, and as a kid I was like, hell yes. And then in the actual episode, the first one, I believe, is Harrison Ford, and he finds he's in a cabin in the snowy something, and he pulls out a tiny saxophone and plays it, and it's like, I remember this saxophone story, and then it cut away from him. We never saw him again. I was like, what? I was sold.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely, it's a family show. Like, it's a very different thing than the Indiana Jones movies. All right, why don't we go to the next question in the order from Scheuchler. Talking of art styles working better for certain genres, what are your favorite examples of art that stylistically should not have worked for a comic but somehow did?
Interesting.
Interesting question. Trying to think of a good... I mean, the first answer that comes to mind is I was surprised when Chris Bocciolo took over when... was that Wolverine and the X? Oh, no, that wasn't him. That was another person that whose art looks like him. But Chris Bocciolo in general, working in the X-Men universe, I was always like, this is a little bit surprising, but back Age of Apocalypse, the Generation X
book, dude, there, it was great. Yeah, it really was. I don't know. This is hard because, like, you know, they do a lot of really amazing stuff with comics. Like, you know, they make comics now where it's all black and white, or, you know, there's no words. There's a lot of the different stuff they're trying to do. I remember that, I don't know if it was Detective Comics or Batman, where there was that one with the Court of Owls where Batman got stuck in that labyrinth, and that was so, like, kind of crazy to kind of read.
Oh, he turned it around.
Yeah, it almost didn't work on an iPad, and kind of like you had to get it kind of like in comic book form. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the good news is there has been, it's been successful. Like, I've been really impressed with a lot of the stuff to, you know, to kind of make it to comic form. It's got to be such a level that you usually don't see too many misses.
I mean, this is the first one that came to mind. Steve Scroggie on Clobber in Time right now. I mean, that's certainly him, like, leading into the stuff that he likes in terms of gross out, not horror stuff, but just like gross actiony stuff. But at the same time, him doing a Thing book, that's not the first idea that I would have necessarily had for a book to put him on, but it's working great. It's totally gross and it's very fun.
Yeah.
All right, we got one here from Stanley. It says, you guys are so funny together. Do you think your dynamic is different in person or online? Do you miss seeing each other in person? Pete punches us a lot less online.
Yeah, that's the thing. I am like, I owe people punches in real life, so it's really hard to kind of virtually be as effective as I normally am in person. Yeah, yeah, what a blessing. I do think the dynamic has changed. I think it took us a little bit to kind of get into the rhythm of going online. But I definitely do miss the in-person kind of back and forth. You know, definitely it's easier to keep you guys in line when you're sitting next to me, for sure.
In line? But, are you hurting us?
Yeah, that's right.
You're like the sheepdog of the... the group?
Yeah, sometimes you get out of hand, you get a little too bold, and if I'm in person, I can get you in check a little bit quicker. You know
is that
what
you see as your role on the show? Because that explains a lot.
That's insane. That is an insane idea. Shout out if anybody believes that Pete is the shepherd of the book club.
Yeah, Pete's the steady one. Pete's the steady, keeps his emotions in check ones. He's like, hey guys, let's bring it down a notch.
No shaking while steady.
Yeah, his hand does not move.
Well, that is pretty steady.
I do think it is different. I mean, we're talking, you know, our Wi-Fis are all different. We're all trying to talk and find our way through it. And it is a skill to be like, okay, he's finishing his thought. Now I can say my thing. So, like, that is definitely a rhythm change. But it's a rhythm that we developed in person for so long in the past.
That's true.
We got one from Stray Bullet that maybe we can wrap up with. It's too hot here. With summer approaching, how hot is too hot? What's the ideal hangout temp for the summer?
Oh, I like a low 70s, maybe high 60s for me is the perfect temp.
Nice. Finally, the oldest question we've ever gotten.
Yeah.
The oldest person question we ever had.
Yeah, I'd agree with a 70s. I like a 70s. 60s is good. I'd prefer a 50s jacket weather. That's good with me.
Oh yeah, you're
50s.
More yeah, you like. You
want, I don't like summer. I don't like summer. It's too hot.
You don't like. You don't like summer, at all. Wow, great, great stuff. I like it to boil. I'm gonna go one further. I like it to be cloudy.
Mm. Whoa,
that's not a temperature.
Put that sun away.
That's an upstate New York answer if I've ever heard.
I like to be
I like gray, cloudy.
Degrees.
Yeah,
100%.
Nothing
and also
haze.
following up on how old this question is, why won't this vending machine work? Can't get my sody out.
Well, great questions there. And folks, we are going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right, this is the part we give back to you, lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics online or Long John Silver for some reason. Do we have a brave volunteer? Is there someone we picked ahead of time? Are we looking for
first hand
up?
We do. We have a volunteer today. I'm going to bring in Cody Thomas. Cody.
Hey, Cody.
Hey,
what's up? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, guys, just shout out to Brett. I'm actually at the airport heading out of New Orleans. Had lunch with Brett today. It's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Look at this.
Where did you have lunch? Cool. Did you go to his restaurant?
I did not. He's off today. But we got some pizza. I was visiting my sisters, doing some traveling nursing. But had a good time. It was great to meet him. And it was cool meeting somebody from the comic book club.
Oh, that's
awesome. You love
in real life hanging out. That is really cool.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Take it away with some trivia.
Yeah. Sorry, so excited. All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Carol Locatell, R.I.P. Ethel. Here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. On June 14th, we have the return of what Spider-Man? Is it A, Spider-Man India, B, bad name for a salesman, or C, Johnny Hawk?
I go with A.
A is correct, sir. Yeah, don't overthink these at all. Here we go. Question number two. The Archie Horror line has a new comic called A Blank Accursed Life coming out this Wednesday. It is about the possibility of Jughead being possessed by a demon. Is it called A, Jinx, a cursed life, B, name of a cool shade store, or C, Sunny Shields?
I'm going to go A.
A again. Nice job. Well done. Yeah, Jinx the cursed. We'll have that in the stack, which will be fun to talk about. Here we go. Last one. What DC supervillain is getting a special number one issue this August? Is it A, Doomsday, B, Catman, or C, Corey Feldman?
I'm going to go A.
A is correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Congratulations. You are going to get a $25 gift card to, would you rather, Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's?
Let's get some comics.
There you go. Good for you.
I will say Long John Silver is the Midtown Comics of the sea.
I don't think that's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
It is true.
Yeah. And Long John Silver's is the cold Midtown Comics.
That's all right. Exactly. Oh, my God. You walk in, you pick your fish sandwich off of the rack.
Mm-hmm. That's not how it works.
Yeah,
at all.
Did you see Frank Miller's cover for...
Oh, wow.
Anyway. Cody, do you have a guess as to the secret movie or TV show that Pete was alluding to here?
I do not. I was not paying that close attention.
Oh, okay. Well, I was talking about the 1985 film Friday the 13th, A New Beginning.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Cody, congratulations. Hit me up on the Slack to remind me. We will get your gift card. And safe travels. Safe flights.
Yes. Safe travels, man.
Morning now. So I'll see y'all later.
Right. Oh, get on that plane.
All right. There we go. Now,
I imagine Cody at the spot where you have to like scan your boarding pass and you're like, hey, put it on the machine, guy.
He's like, stop, I just got to do this podcast real quick right here in front of everybody.
Did you choose the Long John Silver's gift card this time? Is that what you got? Anyway, as we all know, new comics are cool and they're coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking forward to Batman Brave and the Bold number one, as well as Arcade Kings number one.
Justin, what about you?
I knew you were going to pick Arcade Kings.
Oh, yeah?
I did. Because it was right over the Pete plate, which is a garbage plate, as you might expect. A lot of great books out there. I want to shout out
You're right, Dark a lot Ride, of great ones. A
lot of great ones. Dark Ride number 6 by Josh Williamson and art by Andrea Brayson.
No,
it's like such a good... Such a good comic. It's something I'm a big fan of Birthright, as you know. But I also want to shout out one other. The Seasons Have Teeth. I knew it. I knew I was getting you too. Have Teeth number 2 by Dan Waters from Boom. This book is such a surprising, strange idea. I'll pitch it real quick. It's the seasons are sort of personified in these monsters that are running loose. And this main character is a photographer who's sort of down on his luck. Something's going on in his life. And he's out there to try to photograph these monster seasons. And it's just a great, unique, surprising book. Really enjoying it.
Couple of things I'll shout out then that I was interested to check out. I was interested to check out Titans number 1, of course, which is already out from DC Comics. See how they make it different from Nightwing. I guess we'll see. Also, Maleficent number 1.
From yes, dude!
I was very surprised by the Scar book that they put out, so I was like, okay, let's see if they could do it again. So we'll definitely talk about that one. And the last one I'll give a shout out that I'm always looking forward to is She-Hulk from Rainbow Rowell.
Yes,
and the rest
dude.
Of the
oh,
team.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Best romance comic.
Oh, I love it.
Very good. There's some fun baby jokes.
The ships are moving around.
Are we going to keep on the Disney villains thing? Like, are we going to get to, like, the Vague Sense of Adulthood series based on the Pixar villains?
Oh, shots fired, bro. Shots fired.
And all of those books are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday, 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jason Copeland for coming on to talk about Zoop's Full Tilt. Also, Asa Wheatley for Saga of the Shield Maiden. You can check that out on Kickstarter now. Next week, we're going to have Jeff Mose and Patrick Hernandez are going to hear to talk about Spiderweb. A couple of things to plug on our end. Candyman, our Sweet Tooth podcast, is complete. It's all up for season 2. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, we just put up the third part of our required reading series, talk about Flashpoint. That was an interesting discussion. I was very pleasantly surprised about that one. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We got regular stuff coming out every week. We just did a big review of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, so check that out. Riverdale After Dark, a Riverdale podcast, also coming out weekly. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe and follow on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. I'm just a cold Pete, everybody. Remember that.